Getting your arms ready for Rath Yatra, right? You'll be with that drum on Rath Yatra Day?
No, this is for real, not temple.
Oh. You'll be with another drum on Rath Yatra Day. Huh?
Yes,
yeah. How long can you go? The whole parade?
No, I have to do another service, but try.
How's if you could do just one service, can you go the whole parade?
Yeah.
Okay. It's an important service. On Rath Yatra Day especially. Someone that can play strong mridanga the whole way. Maybe you should just do that. Tell the temple president, right? Because one of the services that I've been doing for years and years at New York Rath Yatra is that first parade. For years it was Lokanath Maharaj, but other persons leading that first cart, keeping the intensity of the kirtan going. So keeping the mridanga players, because after some time they're there. Keep the tempo going. Because it's lively kirtan makes the whole Rath Yatra festival very nice. Okay, so this evening I'd like to speak from the third canto Bhagavatam. I've been consecutively speaking on first canto, second canto. Now I'm well into the third canto Bhagavatam, and the speaker in this section is Kardamuni, and the person who is hearing is Vidura, and the chronology of events is it's just a short time after Krishna finished speaking Uddhava Gita, because in the audience of one hearing Krishna speak to Uddhava was Maitreya. By providential arrangement, he just happened to be in the right place at the right time in the midst of a forest in Vrindavan, because Krishna was preparing to leave and he wanted to impart as he did to Arjuna on the Kurukshetra battle, he wanted to impart to Uddhava some parting instructions. And in the course of doing that, Maitreya became a perfected Uttama Adhikari Vaishnav. Prior to that, when Maitreya came along and was very, very happy to see Uddhava and Krishna in the forest, he was respected as vastly learned and a Muni, Maitreya Muni. He was a ascetic and a yogi and a mystic, vastly learned, but he was not perfect in devotion. But by the process of hearing from the right source, from Krishna himself, and the discussion that ensued between Uddhava and Krishna, just as Arjuna became perfect, or just as Maharaj Parikshit became perfect, he became perfect. And Krishna then gave him some service. The service that Krishna gave him was that very soon Uddhava is going to come. This was just 2 days before Maitreya came along. Excuse me. Uddhava came along. Uddhava is going to come very soon, and I would like you to instruct him in the same understanding, the same knowledge that you've just heard. Because through service, then our connection with Krishna is established and maintained. So we need service, whether it's playing mridanga or serving the prasadam or whatever your service is. We need service, and the service comes from Krishna or Krishna's representative. So after Krishna's departure, it would have been very difficult for both Uddhava and Maitreya to maintain their existence and with intense feelings of separation from Krishna that they were undergoing, except that they had some service. I remember in one morning walk conversation in Mayapur, it was a very, very long walk. Prabhupada was into such a mood of appreciation of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that kind of time was flying by. We just made it back to the temple in time for Guru Puja and deity greeting. But Prabhupada was speaking so many wonderful things about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. What a visionary, what a powerful preacher. He preached to all classes of people. The most intellectual, writing books in Sanskrit, the highly learned persons that were influenced by Western culture and Western education and ideology, to the people in government, to the people who are the common people, to the illiterate people. He wrote songs. He spoke to everyone. He had a huge network of arrangement for Namahata, for spreading Krishna consciousness. He envisioned the whole world coming to know about Lord Chaitanya at a time when nobody knew about Lord Chaitanya, even within India. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was such a visionary. Prabhupada was going on and just, he was glowing with enthusiasm speaking about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It was really nice experience. And then somebody said, Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivinoda Thakur saw this vision of Krishna consciousness all over the world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, he spoke about the temple of Vedic planetarium. He envisioned from the rooftop at Navadvip, he saw a Adbhuta Mandir from that far away, the middle of the night, glowing effulgently. Such a visionary. And so one devotee, after some silence, and said, Prabhupada, if he was, why didn't he just build it himself? And Prabhupada said, he left something for us to do. Spreading Krishna consciousness around the world, and now I'm leaving something for you to do, to build this temple. So the vision of a pure devotee is Krishna's vision, but because it's they're holding it in their heart, Krishna makes it manifest. So become a pure devotee and then have some visions. That's the best policy. Become a pure devotee and have some visions of Krishna consciousness to benefit the world. So Krishna had a vision for Maitreya, how Maitreya could maintain his life by speaking what he heard when Krishna spoke to Uddhava to Maitreya. So that's what's happening. First, Vidura met Uddhava. There was some exchange during one day. And then Uddhava had some service to do for Krishna, so Uddhava went. And then he gave him the particular direction of where he should travel, the direction that Maitreya had gone. And he found Maitreya. And he began presenting questions of transcendental knowledge to Maitreya. Now Vidura they're both very elderly. And they're both very wise and vastly learned. But the difference between the two is that Maitreya had heard from Krishna extensively. So now it's Vidura's turn to hear from Maitreya extensively. And that's the matter of disciplic succession. And his inquiry at this stage, it's describing the relationship between Kapila and Devahuti, because part of what Maitreya narrated was that the life, that the lineage of descendants from Swayambhuva Manu. From Swayambhuva Manu, he had two sons and three daughters. And the description of the daughter Devahuti and her marriage to Kardavamuni is from previous chapters, and Kapila Dev became their son. And when Kapila Dev became of age, as was promised by Swayambhuva Manu, Kardamuni left home, took Vanaprastha stage of life, and he went to the forest to perform his devotional practices. Just a little side note over here. I see there's a few older persons in our audience. Prabhupada spoke very strongly about the importance of, or even the necessity of, accepting the Vanaprastha stage of life when children are grown and matured. Our temple president I'm proud to speak of this, is Nityananda Prabhu, who is our temple president in Dallas. Just this past weekend, his younger son was married. Their son was married to Kalki and Kanta Mataji's daughter. So very nice, you know, devotee family, and their son and their daughter were married. So his plan is he's going to take Vanaprastha life. That the son will stay in the home with his new wife and with Nityananda's wife. So she'll continue her service at the temple, and he's going to take Vanaprastha stage of life, come back, but, you know, travel a bit more and less time in Dallas, and gradually increase his direct service to ISKCON society. And I'm sure the other stages will follow that one. Nice example. So Vidura is similarly very elderly. Kardamamuni has gone back to the forest to perform his devotional practices. So Devahuti is, having been for so long, not just the number of years that we know, because this is Satya Yuga, some thousands and thousands and thousands of years. But her husband is now gone, so she's feeling separation from her husband. And she recognizes that attachment is a material attachment, and she's requesting her son, who she knows to be the personality of Godhead, that this is your energy that's covering me. It's your Maya. So you covered me with it, please remove it. So that my mind is no longer bewildered by the delusion of material attachment. Please tell me what I should do. So that's many chapters ago. I'm reading from chapter 32. That goes back to chapter 24. And he discusses the importance of, just as we were talking yesterday at the Sunday feast, the importance of association, sadhu sangha. Because through the medium of sadhu sangha comes devotional service. So there's a whole chapter on the importance of sadhu sangha. Who is a sadhu, how to recognize them, how to associate with them, what happens when you associate with them, what to expect, the stages of unfolding of devotional service from sadhu sangha, the qualities of a sadhu. There are a number of sections of the Bhagavatam where that's spoken about, but it's very, very beautifully described by Kapila Dev. And then in further discussions about this science of devotional service, Vidura continues to ask questions of Kardamamuni. What did they say then? And so Kapiladev begins to describe to Devahuti, because she wants to know how to get out of Maya, how to become free from attachment. There's lots of discussion, very much like what Krishna is describing to Arjuna in chapter 2 Bhagavad Gita. It's Sankhya. Sankhya is what is matter and what is spirit. And making very, very, very clear the distinction between the two, matter and spirit. So Kapiladeva presents Sankhya philosophy. How the process, so that Devahuti, or us as the listener also, the reader, can very clearly distinguish between who we are and the covering of who we are, the gross and subtle body that's covering us, and our misidentifications with it, our upadis. All of that is cleared by proper knowledge from the right source. He's imparting detachment through knowledge. And then he says that knowledge is actually meant to support devotional service, because in that detached state, then one can contemplate the Supreme. So in that detached state, he's of describing the elements, he describes the elements as coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then there's the section that I'm going to be reading from. In the process of unfolding of the creation, the elements are made manifest by Lord Vishnu. That was an interesting sound vibration. So the elements are manifested from Pradhan by the Lord. We know this over and over again. The Lord glanced over Pradhan, and by that glance the living entities were injected, the original impregnation, and with the living entities is the time energy. And agitated by living entities and time energy, the undifferentiated Pradhan began to differentiate, and we get a whole series of elements that are going to be needed for Lord Brahma to put the universe together. In this narration, Kapiladeva describes that there's also the demigods are made manifest. Of course, Brahma makes the demigods manifest from his body, but the whole cosmic manifestation isn't put together yet. And so the demigods are feeling incapable of doing that. Putting together, we don't have the intelligence, we don't have the strength. So they pray to the Lord for both. He hears their prayer, and in response to their prayer, he manifests Super Soul, manifests the universal form, which is a very puzzling entity, the universal form, Virat Rupa. Try to figure that one out. It's a very difficult subject matter. But what the verses that we're going to be reading help to appreciate the relationship of the universal form to the creation itself, as the soul is compared to the individual body. As the soul is animating the body, the Supreme Soul is animating the universe, and the Supreme Soul, Super Soul, manifests the Virat Rupa as the form of the universe, and as the form, so it goes like this. As the form of the universe, the Virat Rup, was able to see, so the demigods that were involved with the power of sight could see. The demigods involved with the power of hearing could hear, because the Virat Rup was hearing. So it's a material event. And so the Lord manifested the Virat Rup so that the demigods, the elements would have the potency, the demigods would understand how to perform their service, and they could, the universe could be assembled. So if you ever want to assemble a universe, read this chapter and know the right prayers to say the Supreme Lord and be very qualified. And then you can maybe create a universe. That's your service, your Lord Brahma. But this is how it happens. So the verses that I'm going to read, there's a few of them in a row, and it starts with text 29 and it goes through 32. As I described this universal form, and as the universal form was manifesting various capacities, then the demigods were also endowed with the capacities, and living entities that they were going to be overseeing then also had the capacity. Like we've heard Prabhupada say, we're not independent. Even things that are done involuntarily, like digesting our food, or the blinking of your eye, or the circulation of blood through your body, we don't think, okay, I'm going to circulate my blood through my body now. Okay, next I'm going to breathe, and next I might, you know, I'm going to blink my eye because it's dry. These things just happen involuntarily. But even those involuntary things, there are demigods that oversee them. Not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Lord. Not even the eye can blink without the sanction of the Lord. And there's some demigods that are overseeing these things, and they are deriving their power from the personality of Godhead. And specifically, what this chapter is describing is their ability to do so, and the living entity's ability to do whatever living entities are unable to do through the demigods, is by the agency of the Supreme Lord. And the once in this circumstance, the living entity becomes involved in fruitive activities. So that's what this chapter is. Actually, it's entanglement in fruitive activities. And the chapter is comparing an attached person and a detached person, and how the attached person acts in this world. They involve themselves in fruitive activities. And the detached person involves himself in activities, but not with attachment, but with devotion to the Supreme Lord. So just read two verses preceding. Because of his transcendental intelligence, the pure devotee is equipoised in his vision and sees himself to be uncontaminated by matter. He does not see anything as superior or inferior, and he feels himself elevated to the transcendental platform of being equal in qualities with the Supreme Lord through the medium of devotional service. Not, hey, I'm as good as God, not like that, but being connected with the Supreme through the medium of devotional service. Through that association, it's like the spark that comes near the fire. It glows as bright as a spark can glow, because it's in contact with the fire. So the soul that's in contact with the Supreme Soul through the connection of bhakti, a devotional service, the qualities of the Supreme Lord are felt by the individual soul, and through that association, divine qualities become endowed within that individual soul, although the individual soul is very tiny. So their capacity is tiny, and the unlimited is unlimited, but the maximum capacity of the living entity is manifest through the medium of devotional service. Then, kind of in a contrasting position, down a bit, if one isn't in pure devotion, but one has some knowledge of the Supreme, but through speculative knowledge, then there's different ideas of what the Supreme is, and there's different limitations of what the soul manifests quality-wise. The verse says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead alone is complete transcendental knowledge, but according to different processes of understanding, he appears differently, either as impersonal Brahman, as Paramatma, as the Supreme Personality Godhead, or as the Purusha avatar. Now, there was a whole section before about going up to the standard of devotional service. Down a bit was the yogis who meditate on super soul, but they're not in devotion. They're not in the mood of serving the Supreme Lord. They're meditating on Paramatma, or the Vishnu form of the Lord. And their destination is not the spiritual world. What's described here is something else. They attain the platform of Brahmaloka. And depending upon how they continue their activities in Brahmaloka and what Brahma does, they may, after that long duration of life in Brahmaloka, return to the spiritual world. Anyway, it's a little intricate. But the point of the verse is, and it's a long purport, depending upon the process that one adopts, or we'll say it differently, depending upon the degree of bhakti that's involved in the process that one adopts, there are different kinds of realizations. Although the absolute truth is one, the absolute truth is perceived partially from this perspective or that perspective according to the process that's accepted. That's what the verse is saying. Beautiful purport. The greatest common understanding for all yogis is complete detachment from matter, which can be achieved by different kinds of yoga. So there's the distinctions of realization of what is supreme, but something that's common to all is detachment from matter. And different processes go about it in different ways. But the end result is, for everyone, is detachment from matter. Those who are averse to the transcendence realize the Supreme Absolute Truth differently through speculative sense perception, and therefore, because of mistaken speculation, everything appears to them to be relative. So there's... It's a classic. This is false and that's real. Brahman, satya jagat mithya, like that. Through mistaken speculation, a mistaken sense perception. That's not a very accurate picture of the absolute truth. Then Kapila Dev goes back to the process of creation that I was discussing earlier and says as follows. From the total energy, the Mahatattva, Kapila says, I have manifested the false ego, the three modes of material nature, the five material elements, the 11 senses, and the material body, along with the individual consciousness. Similarly, the entire universe has come from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in a beautifully written way, Prabhupada weaves back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. I'll read some of it. But as the soul is the animating force of the body, the Supreme Soul is the animating force of the universe. As the individual soul has a minute degree of independence, svarat is the word, the Supreme Soul has unlimited independence. As the individual soul has minute consciousness, the Supreme has unlimited consciousness. He refers to the verse from the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Kshetragyam Chapi Mam Vidhi. You know that verse? Kshetra and Kshetragya Arjuna wants to know at the beginning of chapter 13. Six things in three sets of two. Was the field of activities, kshetra, and the knower of the field of activities. So matter and spirit, matter and spirit, matter and spirit, three times. What is the object of knowledge, and what is knowledge? What is prakriti, what is purusha? Matter and spirit. Sankhya, distinguishing matter from spirit. So Krishna's answer is, this body is the field of activities, and one who knows the field of activities, that's the kshetragya, the soul that's within. And then next he says there's one soul that's the knower of all fields, of all activities. Kshetragya cha api mam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata. In one lecture I heard Prabhupada speak, he said, in one word, Krishna has defeated Mayavad philosophy, cha. Cha means and. So one verse says there's the knower of the field of activities, that's the individual soul. And cha means there's another one. So there's two. Because the Mayavadis say you can't have two. There's only one. They say, those that have an idea, that there's a jiva soul, an atma, a living entity, that's imagination. Because you can't have a jiva soul and a supreme soul. You can't have Brahman and Paramatma, because that makes two. There's only one. That's their philosophy. So they say it's a mistake. But Krishna says, cha. And the distinction is, the other is sarva chetreshu bharata. He's the knower of all fields of all activities. And that's super soul. Let me just read a little how Prabhupada says this. Swarat means independent. The Supreme Lord is independent, and the individual soul is also independent. Although there is no comparison between the two qualities of independence, the living entity is minutely independent, and the Supreme Lord is fully independent. As the individual soul has a material body made of five elements and the senses, the Supreme Independent Lord similarly has a gigantic body of the universe. The individual body is temporary. Similarly, the entire universe, which is considered to be the body of the Supreme Lord, is also temporary. And both the individual and universal bodies are products of the Mahatattva. One has to understand the differences with intelligence. Everyone knows that his body has developed from a spiritual spark, and similarly, the universal body has developed from the supreme spark, supersoul. As the individual body develops from the individual soul, the gigantic body of the universe develops from the supreme soul. And he goes on, back and forth. So the distinction is very clear. The similarity is clear, and the distinction is clear. And what's necessary out of all of this exercise is to clearly identify oneself as the conscious being within this creation, within the body, within Baltimore, within the universe, within wherever, whatever scope you can think of, where we have a distinct identity. And the whole universe itself similarly is the universal form animated by the super soul. Next, this perfect knowledge can be achieved by a person who is already engaged in devotional service with faith, steadiness, and full detachment. Again, full detachment, same as all forms of yoga. This is required, detachment. And who is always absorbed in thought of the Supreme. He is aloof from material association, just as Krishna is aloof from material association. Although this universe is coming from him, he is aloof from it. His prakriti is bina prakriti. It's separated from him. My dear, respectful mother, I have already described the path of understanding the absolute truth, by which one can come to understand the real truth of matter and spirit and their relationship. Because remember, her question was, I'm feeling attached to family life. My husband has just left. And you're this all that's remaining, because my 9 daughters, they're also married, they're already gone. You're all that's left, and very soon you're going to go. I know. You're not going to stay forever. You're Lord Kapila Dev. You're going to be off teaching everybody. And I'll be all alone, and I'm attached. How do I get free from this pang of attachment? He's answering her question. And then the last verse here. Philosophical research. This is the speculative endeavor. Gyane prayasa. Udapasya namante eva. Lord Brahma says one should discard that. So Kapila Deva is going to say something very similar. Philosophical research culminates in understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After achieving this understanding, when one becomes freed from the material modes of nature, he attains the stage of devotional service. Either by devotional service directly or by philosophical research, one has to find out the same destination, which is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So guess which verse Prabhupada refers to from Bhagavad Gita that says the same thing. Bhuhunam jamanamante ganavan mam prapadyate. What's the impetus? Vasudev sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. So not guaranteed at all. If you take up the process of philosophical speculation, you're going to end up in the right place. Very, very rare. But it can happen. The indirect can happen. It's just very difficult, and many, many lifetimes, and highly unlikely. It's possible. So it's not recommended. And these previous verses are saying many other conclusions can be reached instead. Instead of Vasudev Sarvamiti, one can reach some other conclusions. I just heard this beautiful description that Prabhupada is making about, it was some reporters in London, I think. And they were asking many questions. And one after the next, Prabhupada was answering their questions. So one of them, they asked, what's the role of women? What's the role of sex? All those things that reporters like to ask about and get something to put in their newspaper article. But one of them asked, something about attaining the spiritual world. And Prabhupada paused and didn't give an immediate answer. And then he said, actually, we're in the spiritual world now. He said that repeated it. Right now, because the Vedic picture is that the whole of everything is resting in the spiritual sky, and presently there's a cloud within the spiritual sky, like it's speaking of here of the Mahatattva. The universe is created by the Mahatattva, as is the body of the individual being, and the senses, the elements that make up the body, come from the Mahatattva. The Mahatattva is a cloud in the vastness of the spiritual sky. Because we're too much identifying with the cloud, we're not aware of the spiritual sky. But we're always in the spiritual sky. So those that are back to this topic, the speculators, there's still this degree, this quantum of enviousness towards the Supreme that brings us within this cloud of the material energy. And then under the control of the three modes of nature and the forces of karma and the deluding potency of Maya, and you know, we're all pretty busy forgetting Krishna. Although we're actually in the spiritual sky. And there are some persons that become disgusted with the material affairs. They want liberation, so they want to enter into the spiritual sky, merge into position of oneness with the Brahma-jyoti, not having information of the spiritual planets and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or if they hear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead out of envy, they like to bring him down to some other position, philosophize him out of existence somehow or another, this trick or that philosophical sleight of hand. Born of envy and frustration with this material existence. Both. On the one side and on the other side. I don't want to be here, I don't want to be there. So let me merge. And thus, other types of understandings arise. So here, let me read the purport. Nice presentation by Srila Prabhupada, just two paragraphs. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita that after many, many lives of philosophical research, the wise man ultimately comes to the point of knowing that Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is everything, and therefore he surrenders unto him. That's Bahunam Jamanamante. Such serious students in philosophical research are rare because they're very great souls. If by philosophical research one cannot come to the point of understanding the Supreme Person, then his task is not finished. His search in knowledge is still to be continued until he comes to the point of understanding the Supreme Lord in devotional service. Paragraph. The opportunity for direct touch with the Personality Godhead is given in Bhagavad Gita, where it is also said that those who take to other processes, namely the process of philosophical speculation and mystic yoga practice, have much trouble. Klesho dikkitarash tesham avyakta sakta chetasam. After many, many years of much trouble, a yogi or wise philosopher may come to him. But his path is very troublesome, whereas the path of devotional service is very easy for everyone. One can achieve the result of wise philosophical speculation simply by discharging devotional service. And unless one reaches the point of understanding the Personality of Godhead by his mental speculation, all his research work is said to be simply a labor of love. The ultimate destination of the wise philosopher is to merge into the impersonal Brahman. But that Brahman is the effulgence of the Supreme Person. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 14:27, Brahmanohi patishtaham amrita svaya yasya cha. I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is indestructible and is the supreme bliss. The Lord is the supreme reservoir of all pleasure, including Brahman pleasure. Therefore, one who has unflinching faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead is said to be already realized in impersonal Brahman and Paramatma. Kapila Dev is it's a very exhaustive answer, because she's asked her question in chapter 24 and here it is 32 and he's still answering. She doesn't get it by the time he's done. She's never going to get it. Same, if we don't get it, we're not going to get it. When she asks her question, it's several verses long. Kapila Dev just looks at her and smiles. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary, Lord Kapila Dev is thinking, Devahuti, what are you saying? You're my mother, and I'm the personality of Godhead, and you're highly qualified. You're not attached to family life. I'm your son. And you know it. I'm the personality of Godhead. You're just asking these questions for the benefit of those that don't have the understanding. So I'll oblige you and give you some answers, and long answers. So many verses of these understandings where ideas are repeated from slightly different perspectives again and again, and we hear them again and again. It's to make it very, very clear what the position detachment. Detachment from the conception that we're very attached to, and that is trying to be enjoyers of the material energy. We're addicted to that, although we know better. We're at least habituated to it by conditioning. So verse after verse after verse is presented so that this detachment from matter, and through the medium of devotional service, connecting to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And gradually, as the cantos progress, the prominence of the Personality of Godhead in the life of one in devotion grows with greater and greater clarity and luminosity and brilliance, so that Shukadeva Goswami can then present Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Just hearing at lunch yesterday, and some kind of a scholar in England was having a conversation with Prabhupada about he was a spiritual man that didn't like the way the academic people were looking at religiosity of any kind, in particular Eastern religiosity, Eastern philosophy, because they just didn't understand. And because they didn't understand, they were saying very critical things. But he himself had his doubts for all of his, you know, spirituality. He had his doubts about, he referred to the pastime that Prabhupada described in Krishna book of Krishna and the gopis, Vastra Hari Lila. He said, I don't understand this. Could you explain it? You know, is it okay that a young man feels that some pleasure in having some girls undress themselves in front of him? He said it kind of softly, like apologetically, but you know, I don't get it kind of message. And Prabhupada right away said that is why there are 9 cantos that precede the 10th canto. And if one doesn't have a proper understanding of Krishna as the personality of Godhead, and independent and not contaminated by lust and material desire, then one will take his activity to be like our activity, and therefore the 9 cantos are there. So this is minimally not only detachment from the conception of self as the body, but the conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as like ourselves. Thoroughly cleanse that misconception away, so that when the pastimes of Krishna are revealed, whether it's the killing of Putana from his earliest childhood, or in any of his activities, there it's not ordinary. We can not just by blind sentiment accept it, but one can have realized it by the process of carefully hearing the earlier cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. And even, you know, from our day-to-day activity, another superlative benefit from hearing Srimad Bhagavatam very carefully and systematically is detachment from this atmosphere that we're surrounded by. looks material. In fact, any direction you look, not just in this house, anywhere you are, we're a spirit soul and we're a material atmosphere. In front of us, behind us, to the left of us, to the right of us, above us, below us, in any of the 10 directions, we're this tiny little spark in the midst of matter, and we're swimming in matter. And the laws of nature that are governing matter and our attraction for being the enjoyer of it and thus further implicating ourselves, we're in bondage, we're in a prison house. So how do you get out of the prison house? And the process of hearing is the means, because actually we're in the spiritual sky. We're just too much identifying with matter. There's not detachment. And it's exactly what Devahuti is speaking, is asking Kapila Dev, and he's obliging her. One reads this section properly, and not just a mental adjustment, because that's not what Krishna consciousness is. It's not just, okay, I'll take that idea and put that over there and say yes to this other idea and then operate. Change my software into another program and operate. It's the soul becomes awakened by the process of hearing, and then how that awakened soul sees things is as Kapila Dev sees things, or as Krishna sees things, or as God sees things, as the enlightened one sees things. It can give us the eye through which to see things in this detached manner. And then we can go about all our activities of life. Even the, quote, worldly ones that are involved with matter, not just our sadhana ones, but the everyday things that we do with the mood of devotion attached to the Supreme Lord. If we hear very, very carefully and regularly from the right source and maintain proper devotional practices, that's what is the byproduct. We become progressively realized and progressively enlightened, progressively connected to Krishna and detached from matter. Attachment to, says in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that what is called detachment is the same as attachment to the Supreme. For no one can be detached without attachment to the Supreme. And as this section is saying, there's different ideas of what is Supreme. And depends on the process that we're following. But one can, if one takes up the direct process and directly connects with the Supreme by a very merciful teacher with very merciful teachings, it's the best method of progressing from the platform of attachment to the platform of attachment to the Supreme through sadhu sangha, as Kapila Dev is teaching us and teaching Devahuti. Okay, so any comments or discussion on this? Yes?
The detachment, is it a forceful activity, or is it natural?
It's natural. There may be some effort behind it, but that's not unnatural. Take an example that Prabhupada would sometimes give. Supposing one has the habit of smoking a cigarette. It's a habit, it's a nasty habit, and so if one is attached to it, there may be some forceful, but it's done, it's not, the method that Prabhupada recommended was two, regulation and higher taste. For those that were too much attracted, he wouldn't just admonish them, he would say, regulate, smoke one in the morning and one in the evening. This is in the early days, not more recent, you know, later stages of Krishna consciousness. But instead of smoking a cigarette, chant. Every time that urge is there, chant the holy name. Bring the tongue to the position of higher taste and then the lesser taste. So there's some effort. Supposing another one, somebody has an anger problem. So there's some effort. But, you know, better, where does that anger come from? We know from Bhagavad Gita where anger comes from. Kamesha Krodesha. Rajoguna Samudbhava. So if it comes from contact with the mode of passion, then the effort, the conscious effort is, yes, I should not yield to that urge of anger, but instead I should cultivate the quality of goodness in contact with the quality of goodness. So forgiveness is the antidote for anger. But besides just forgiveness of some particular something that's causing me some anger, as a life principle, as one can receive forgiveness from Krishna for our misdeeds and our long forgetfulness and ignoring him, we can be forgiving of someone for their transgressions. So it's the higher principle naturally, using your word, naturally brings about a detachment. So some effort, but the primary power, driving force, is connecting to the Supreme. And so then the others we regulate. We follow our regulative principles. Okay? Something? Yes.
Mark, you were mentioning about like being a part in the spiritual squad. My question is, Maharaj, are we? This always a confusion is there, is that we are Nitya Baddha, as it says, but we are eternal part and parcel of Supreme Lord. So, did it ever happen that we were part of spiritual sky and we got envious and we came down? Because in spiritual sky there is no envious.
That's right.
So we were never part of spiritual sky. We always been conditioned.
Okay, here we go. In the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna uses the word anadi to describe the conditioning state of the living being, similar to nitya. And there are two ways of looking at anadi or nitya. Anadi means without a beginning. So there are two ways of looking at without a beginning. One is absolute, and the other is so far back in time and back in time and back in time you can't trace out when. Two different kinds. So Prabhupada speaks of it in the latter sense. So far back in time you can't trace out the beginning. But then there's an event. Now, we'll get to, you know, how can you have envy in the spiritual world? We'll get there. But how do you conceive of an anadi event? And the answer is the mind can't conceive of it. It's inconceivable. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his that little booklet that he circulated in English in 1896, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, His Life and Precepts. In the precepts section, there he discusses Dasamula, the 10 essential teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And one of them is there's some living entities that are eternally liberated and some living entities are eternally in bondage. Nityabaddha, he addresses it. And he writes, do not ask the misleading question, when was the living entity created? Because living entities are eternal. But we do say don't we? The living entities are emanations from the personality of Godhead. So that makes it sound like once upon a time there was Krishna, and he thought, gee, it'd be really nice to have some living entities, and boop, there's some living entities. So that's an event within time. But what's an event that's not an event within time? Because we think of events within time. Once upon a time, and then something, and then something. Cause and effect. Don't ask the misleading question, because it's a misleading question. When were the living entities created? Because it's not an event within time, so when is a misleading question. Nor when they were enthralled, because it's a misleading question. It's an event that's not within time, as we know it. What's that? It's inconceivable. And that's what Prabhupada writes in the third, is an anadi. It's something that in our conditioned state we can't understand, but when we're liberated we'll understand. So don't try to figure it out. That's his advice. Because you won't be able to. I mean, you can try to figure it out, but you won't be able to. Because the mind won't carry you there. It's in another realm. It's still an event. Okay, now what about, what's the cause of this timeless event? And the cause is the living entities' misuse of free will. Okay, what's the cause of their misuse of free will? It's the same question, just asked again. And the answer is there isn't a cause. It's other than the living entity misusing their free will. And what's the reason? There's no good reason. They just misused their free will because they have that freedom and they misused it. What prompted them to misuse it? They just misused it. Because it's their capacity to use it properly or improperly, they misused it. And that's an event. Well, when did that happen? Well, it's not an event within time. Once upon a time, and then ba-boom, and then ba-boom. It's an event. But it's not an event within time as we think of events. The problem is we're thinking of it as an event in time when it's not an event in time, but it's an event. That's the difficulty is we're using yardsticks that apply here that don't apply to such an event. It's an event. That doesn't have the same cause, effect. And then, you know, that brings another cause that causes another effect. That then becomes another cause. So here we are. Stuck in the material world. So what's the original thing? It's misuse of free will. Well, why did we do that? It was no good reason. It was dumb. Well, how can you be dumb in the spiritual world? You're marginal. You have the capacity. Jiva Goswami answers it this way in Bhakti Sandarbha. The original event is Bahirmukha Jiva, turning attention away from the Supreme. Literally, turning your face away from the Supreme. Bahir Mukha. You're looking at the sun, all you see is light. Turn your face from the sun, all you see is shadow. You don't see light. How can we make a mistake? Because we're marginal. We're not supreme. One time Prabhupada said, the reason that you can't understand this is because you're envious of Krishna. you're not Krishna. You're prone to make mistakes. You're tiny. But you think you're not tiny. You think you're the Supreme. That's why you can't understand it. We're prone to fall. We're prone to, you know, we're marginal. We're prone to also be with Krishna. And that's our natural position. This is our unnatural position. Well, why do you pick the unnatural position? We made a mistake. Misuse of free will. etc. This topic can go on for a long time.
So now I remember Prabhupada's one lecture I was listening. So same question Prabhuji Nirmadho Prabhu asked. Last sentence Prabhupada said, now we have to think how to go back.
Yeah.
Rather than we are here, so now we have to think how can we go back. That's important.
Another way of saying the same thing is someone is in the ocean drowning and someone throws them a lifeline. They say, well, wait a minute. How did I get here? Never mind how you got here. Grab a hold of the lifeline. Well, before I grab a hold of the lifeline, I want to understand how I got here. You're going down three times, four times. Grab a hold of the lifeline, man. Like that. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
His Holiness Srila Prabhupada Maharaj.
Jai.